Welcome to Keep Making Movies, the podcast where we explore, shall we say, movies that may have needed a bigger budget. We evaluate the movie for what it is, decide if it could have been improved with a budget, and if it'll join our Keep Making Movies official recommend list. I'm your host, KJ, and with me is...
Tom.
Today we are discussing Michael Costanza's The Collingswood Story. This is Michael Costanza's fourth feature-length film following There's No Place Like Homegirl, Flasher, and Beat the Bash. In The Collingswood Story, we follow Rebecca, who is staying in a historic home in Collingswood, New Jersey. She's going to school at Rutgers Camden, and her friend from home, Johnny, calls her incessantly on the computer where they can do video chat in 2002. As a birthday present, Johnny shares some phone numbers that you kind of call with your computer, it's a little confusing, of other people who leave their webcams on all day and suggests that Rebecca should pay for her own seance reading. Happy birthday, Rebecca. Go buy this seance reading. The seance leader scares
here's
Rebecca.
Here's a bill. Happy birthday. Here's a bill.
Here you go. It was a little weird that Johnny didn't offer to pay, but so The seance leader scares Rebecca pretty good. And then Johnny kind of calls the seance. I think her name's Vera. Calls Vera. And then Vera tells Johnny that there's a cult in Collingswood, probably in the house where Rebecca's staying. Everybody's getting creeped out. It all culminates with Rebecca buying 100 feet of phone cord so she could bring her computer up into the attic, like in real time, not like set it up in the attic, like walk with the computer to see if there's a cult up there. And there is. There's a cult up there somehow. There's a cult up in the attic. They have to climb through a ladder in the bathroom to get there, and then they mutilate Johnny through the computer, I think.
Is there a cult, or is this just one guy?
Well, that's a good question, but I think a more fun question, was it the same guy that was wearing the American flag shorts? I think it might have been the same guy. But let's get into it. Mm. Let's start with our favorite question. Tom, what do you think the goals of the creators of The Collingswood Story are?
I think the goals of the creators were the goals of the creators for a lot of these found footage things, which is to create a real life document, right? Like an existing document. And, you know, this is something that predates film. You used to have, you know, kind of ideas of like Frankenstein is sort of a found footage horror movie. It's the original where we find like the letters of Frankenstein. Dracula too. Dracula is a collection of journal entries and letters, right? There isn't a Bram Stoker who's telling you what's going on. And so for whatever reason, found footage connects well to horror movies. And the original horror found footage is Cannibal Holocaust, which is a look at a cannibal island or something like that, you know, in a sort of found footage style. And I think they're going for this. They're doing it with what was 2002's version of Zoom, which seems to work just as well as Zoom, I think. And what the director, I think, was going for was a means of doing found footage on an even lower budget. So what you do is instead of having a camcorder record everything, you have a Zoom call or the precursor to a Zoom call. And therefore you only need two rooms. You don't need to actually have more than two or three or four sets for your thing. And so it becomes a remarkably good way of not only having found footage, but not ever having to adjust the lights or camera angles to suit anything or have to worry about somebody wandering into your set or anything like that. So I think that was the director's goal. Can I make a found footage movie without having to actually move the camera? And to be fair, not having jumpy camera lens stuff is kind of nice. Having a still camera and not have to pretend that this is real because the camera's jumping around and giving me a headache is kind of nice. It's also very static, and you know, your mind might wander while that goes on, but that, I think, was the goals of the creators. What do you think?
Yeah, it's funny. As I mentioned last week, I was watching this with my wife, Rachel, and I asked her what she thought the goals were, and she said, yeah, to create the next Blair Witch Project. While I was watching it, I haven't seen Blair Witch, but I didn't connect those dots. And now that you're saying it, I completely agree. This does feel like a found footage, even though that's not how it's presented. It's presented as if we're in the room with them.
Yeah, we don't have the frame. They don't give us a frame.
Right. It's not like, oh, we found these recorded, Skype, I don't even think was around at the time. So we found these recorded internet video messages. In this case, we're supposed to actually be watching the video chats in real time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But still, I completely understand what you mean by a found footage film. So yeah, I agree. I had thought maybe it was just to tell a creepy story with the new webcam technology, and they were just trying to think, well, what kind of story could exist in webcam land only? Which was to say it was brand new is not doing it justice. The thought of having something similar to a Zoom meeting in 2002, it was borderline futuristic. You could buy webcams, and I think Yahoo Messenger, I looked it up at the time, could do it. But I don't think it was a common thing. I think you would have had to really go out of your way to be able to have a video conversation with somebody. And over dial-up, it would not have looked that good and that sharp. But that's okay, right? The point of the movie wasn't to make a realistic web video conversation. It was to use that as the setting for the story.
Yeah, and it's a really good point you make about it not being found footage, because there's more than just the absence of a frame, and we should probably give some context there. The frame would be, like in Blair Witch Project, they mentioned these three teenagers or young adults had gone missing, and all we had were these camcorder recordings. And so there's some editor who's coming in and saying, this we actually found, right? It's the same case with Frankenstein, it's the same case with, I actually don't remember if Dracula does it, but regardless, in this they don't have that, and they also do have some artistic editing in there. You have this kind of, in the beginning, an overlap of these different photographs, these different black and white kind of creepy photographs that would not be explained except by the hand of a director, right? And so in certain ways it is not, I guess, what you call pure found footage, if you want to say there's a pure version of the genre, and something like Cannibal Holocaust or the Blair Witch Project are exemplars of the pure version of the genre. And so I think it's a really good point. It isn't necessarily doing that, because how would this be communicated to us? Do they record these things?
Right.
Yeah.
And that, even at the time, would be even more astounding for a computer in 2002.
Yeah, but they also never leave the frame. They never leave the perspective of the computer, right? So in a certain way, it has this odd, like, personhood with it, where the computer is the observer. It's like there's a few movies that did this. I think there's one in the 60s where everything is seen from the perspective of the main character. You don't see the main character unless he looks in a mirror in one scene, but you only see him looking around, and it's pretty annoying. Actually, it's kind of hard to watch, but this movie is maybe doing something more like that than found footage, except the perspective here is the webcam or the webcams.
It's either the webcam or the screen of the computer. Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're watching them browse the internet in 2002.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So it's the computer is this odd, you wouldn't call it, I guess you'd call it a first person perspective movie, because it's not the director. It's not
it's first person from multiple computers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all first person perspective. It's all except it's a computer that has no opinion on the issue. Which is sort of interesting, right? That's not, yeah, first person is not something that works well for movies. And I don't think the first, for whatever flaws this movie has, I don't think the first person perspective is one of them.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And so let's bring up the next question. How do we think they did with the money they had?
So this is a little different because I think it's an interesting idea. The problem is it's incredibly static. It's incredibly static. One of the things I was listening to a podcast on music composition, and the podcast host was saying he's a composer and he coaches people in composition. He says one major problem young composers have is there isn't enough peaks and valleys with music. It's just sort of the same. They have an idea, but they don't know how to create narrative progression within their music. And that's sort of what's happening here. There's a narrative idea, some haunted house. Basically, that's the narrative idea. Haunted house.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. We're going to see that from the perspective of the computer, but there isn't a lot of peaks and valleys. Very little happens. The dramatic tension is supposed to come from the psychic character that they dial into occasionally, who is warning them about a cult in a 19th century serial killer or something. It's standard boogeyman fare. But what's actually happening in any given scene is basically a young attractive girl and a young attractive boy are talking to one another, and I was far more interested in what their dating status was than I was in any supernatural thing. I found that more kind of compelling and also a little confusing. I couldn't tell if they were a couple or just friends and they want to be a couple. But that I think is the problem with the money. I mean, that idea is fine, but you got to do something with it. You got to make something happen, right? And they don't do that at all.
Well, one of the things I actually liked a lot was every computer kind of had three different frames. You either saw the entire subject, exactly what the webcam saw, or you saw the desktop in its entirety with the icons, the app, the webcam app that looked very gizmo-ish. I don't know exactly what I mean by that, but it wasn't a square window. It had all the fun extruding parts that looked like something out of 1999 or 2000. Mm-hmm. And then the subject would have been pretty small in that. Or there was one other like zoom level that was in between. So you mostly saw the gizmo or the widget. You didn't see the entire desktop, so maybe you couldn't see the icons. But he kind of cut between those three perspectives and then cut back and forth between the two people, I thought, enough to make it interesting visually.
Okay. I guess I still found it static. I mean, I appreciate that they had the computer desktop and then you could read about the Collingswood massacres and their various
forms. Well, so then that's a fourth one, right? And then the fourth one was the full page web browser that he was going through. But I mean, when they were chatting, sometimes you just saw them, but sometimes you saw the desktop of the computer. And I thought that gave you enough visual interest.
Variety.
Yeah, to not have your eyes get bored, so to say.
Okay.
I also really liked everybody's desktop. Like, you could tell they took quite a bit of interest in what icon set they would have chosen at the time for their My Briefcase and My Computer. The psychic had a set. The friend, the bro-y friend, had a set. Rebecca and Johnny all had their own specialized desktop icons. So I appreciated that. I thought that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fine. I didn't find it enough to be visually engaging, I suppose, that bit of variation. And I would say I still think they need to do more. I hate jump cuts or jump scares and that type of thing, but there's nothing that happens, right? You have all of this, you're presented with the possibility of all this negative space, which could potentially call out to you as an audience member to look for it, to see something come in, right? It's a really good way of creating tension. what you see in those frames doesn't actually allow for a lot of negative space.
Right. Right.
It's pretty claustrophobic. It's pretty closed in. Right. Imagine if she moved the camera until she's in the attic. She's in a small space all the time. Mm-hmm. A small, mm-hmm. cozy, comfortable space. He's, I don't know where the hell he's in. He's in a
his bedroom,
bedroom I yep. guess, or something mm-hmm. like that. Which is also small. There's no sense of composition in those spaces. And you could do that. I mean, imagine having at one point she moves, oh, look at this room. Look at this. What was it? The dining room. She's like, look how cool this is. And you turn to the side and it's just a pretty normal dining room. You're like, what is cool about this? But that type of thing, creating a little bit more of visual composition within the video recording would have been interesting. And I think you could have found more interesting rooms or use that kind of negative space to imply a threat.
Right.
Because you keep looking. I kept looking at it at first thinking, oh, something's coming behind them.
Mm.
Right. They can't see behind themselves.
Right. And then they can scream at each other, look behind you, behind. Like,
yeah. And it doesn't have to be a jump cut, or it doesn't even have to be that corny, or it can be that corny. I mean, there's a reason why people do that. It's effective. But it's not done at all, nor do you think it's going to be done. I mean, about 15 minutes in, you are not looking at the negative space anymore. You're right. Not assuming it's going to happen.
The other interesting thing, in 2002, laptops weren't very common, right? They were available, but they were like twice as much as a desktop. So presumably she has a laptop, right? Mm-hmm. Presumably she has a laptop and she's attached a webcam to it. Because in 2002, webcams weren't built in the laptop. Like, that wasn't a thing. So I also wonder if they did more of her walking around the house, the audience at the time might have rejected it. Like, how is she doing that? Like, why would you walk around with this expensive computer? Right now we have our phones, so we're very used to FaceTiming and walking around and being on a walk maybe. But at the time, I wonder if they wouldn't have thought of it. Which brings up another point. So as you pointed out, the only tension in the movie is from the psychic. But I think they were trying to do other tension things in a webcam environment, right? The friend telling that guy, oh, she's probably with somebody else, right?
That was more confusing than anything, but...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's true. It's true, right? I don't think it worked, but I think that's other tension, right? That mm-hmm. could have been a plot point that they pull, you know...
Work on it. They don't do anything with it.
Right.
It also doesn't make any sense. Are they dating?
Or does he just have a crush on her? Like, it was a little.
It's really confusing as to, you know, like, and she also, something happened with her father or her stepfather that suggested.
Oh, yeah.
And she left Bedford, I think Bedford, Pennsylvania, right. or whatever, because of something with the stepfather.
Right.
But that's never picked up or, worked on, and I don't need someone to ride in on their white stallion and explain the thing that happened to me. Suggestions and half understood stories are fine, but they do nothing with it.
Yeah,
and the central relationship is, like, I think they're dating, and then when the threat of, like, maybe someone else is there. First of all, it's not entire. It's convincing to no one who is watching this movie that there's, like, some dude there that she's actually into. So it's not convincing at all. It's weird that our hero would be convinced by the douchey guy that's true, and then they don't do anything with it. It's like it's one beat where he's like,
"Yep,
oh, is somebody there?" And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And they just drop it. It's not even a fight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they tried, right? They tried to do tension with that. They tried to do tension with the old guy in the USA flag shorts.
Yes.
Right? He's kind of like dancing, and then I forget what he says to her, and she's like, I'm hanging up now. But, like, again, I guess that counts as tension.
Yeah, I kind of found it funny.
And then they get scared by the psychic, and I'm going to put this in a separate category. If Nick was here, he'd be like, oh, this is a separate tension thing. They leave the webcams on all night because they're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was them just trying to come up with something that was interesting about the webcams. Oh, we can have video on each other while we're sleeping so we feel safer, Right, that would have been one of the first times you could do that.
Yeah, I thought, though, what they would do with that, not that we should say what the filmmakers need to do specifically, but just I thought they're asleep and we can see them sleeping. So the only perspective is a first-person perspective from the computer that can't do anything. It can't comment. It has no... And so now you have an opportunity to have something creepy happen, to have something happen, something visually interesting, to suggest, oh no, this girl's in danger, or this guy's in danger, or something like that.
There's so nothing, right? We fade to black nothing. Twice, I think.
Yeah. There's no threat. And so, you know, I was sure like they were gonna sleep, and then you were gonna see like a shadowy figure lean over her or something, and blah 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 blah. There's nothing.
And then the only other tension thing I can think of is when he can see the little stuffed animal in the bathtub on the web pictures, but his friend and Rebecca cannot.
And when he goes back to it, it's gone.
And it's gone. That's those are all the tensions, I think.
Yeah.
That they try to do.
I don't think the man with the I should probably explain him. There's a sort of chat roulette scene. So it, apparently in this world, the online chat rooms sort of work like ham radios, where you just dial into different frequencies or numbers and there's just people there.
No, he said there's in the yellow pages, there's a section for people who have their webcams on all the time. That's where he got these numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the yellow pages are the 10 digit phone numbers that they're calling.
Yeah. But it didn't remind you a little bit of like the ham radio thing, where it's like there's frequencies and you could check the frequency and see if somebody's there and talk to them.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I mean, that seems to be what it is. It's just like you could just dial in and anybody will be there. And there's one guy who is a older man who's in American flag shorts and no shirt. And he's pretty disheveled. And when you first see him running around without a shirt, slapping his stomach and talking to this young woman, you think he's going to do something inappropriate, but he's just sort of silly. And that's it. You know, like the entire tension for me was, oh God, I hope he doesn't say something gross to this poor girl. I wasn't worried about him being like the devil or something. I was just, oh, don't be creepy. Don't be creepy. And fortunately, he's not that creepy.
Yeah, no, she hangs up before anything.
Before anything could happen, yeah.
Well, do we think a budget could have helped this movie?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's that you could have had more interesting spaces. Because while I appreciate their kind of low budget idea of we're going to have only 4 shots until the last scene, which is an extended move around, I think having a larger budget would have allowed for a few things. It would have allowed for a more interesting house where the composition could be something. Like they could do something with the composition. And there's also one thing we forgot to mention is the video email. She sends him several video emails when she goes out.
Yes.
And just videotapes things and then sends them back. And again, you think something is going to come of this. And literally nothing comes of it. They find the haunted lane. She films the house. Nothing happens. It's just a house without its lights on.
Yep. But it was really fun as somebody who spent quite a bit of time in Collingswood to be like, oh, do I recognize any of these things? Oh, I wonder if that's, you know.
So if you're one of the 8,000 people who lives in Collingswood, New Jersey.
You're going to love those scenes.
You are going to love those scenes. Yeah, but I think a budget in that instance, yes, that would happen. Would have helped, because you could have done something where, because clearly here she's, however realistic it is technologically, she's mobile. She can move her camera to the house, to the evil house where the initial cult organized or whatnot. She could have found the well. Something could have happened, right? And I think a little more budget, you wouldn't have lost the, you know, it's not, I guess technically not found footage, but found footage light. You wouldn't have lost that, and you'd still have now something happen. Like you could go to the new house, you could have her look around, You could have ever found the well where the girls are in. You could have introduced that French cult guy from the 19th century who jumps out at the end, shown him in a window. Like, you could have done something else. And it seems like with their budget, it was so low that all they could do is film things from a moving car and just drive around Collingswood at midnight or something when nobody would be out and just film things to create some kind of visual difference. But nothing comes of it.
No, I agree. I think if there was more budget, the other thing you would have, I think you could have replaced was, instead of looking at web pages describing what happened, you could have shot what actually have happened.
Mm-hmm.
You could have shown the cult and why they're so creepy and why we should be afraid of them. You could have actual scenes of cult people doing cult things instead of a webpage showing you news articles about the cult.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at that point, you have to drop the conceit, though, the webcam conceit.
Unless you do it before the credits, or, you know, you do it outside of the, right, you start the movie maybe with the cult doing cult things and then mm-hmm. cut to the credits, and then from now on we're in the webcams.
Yeah.
At least the audience would know what it was. And then if you looked it up on the webpages, that's fine. You wouldn't have to show the webpages. Now you know that the characters know what you know that you saw before the mm-hmm. opening credits.
Yeah, I mean, having characters discover something via search engine is not very interesting. I don't know if I would like to see a lot of footage outside of the frame that they present.
Okay.
I think mm-hmm. at that point we are violating the director's vision with more budget.
Mm.
I think that is, even though I know I agree that I think we kind of just have shown that it's not technically found footage because they're doing things without a frame and they are adding in kind of editing tricks that are outside of that. But I think the director's vision is pretty much married to the proto-Zoom thing that's going on.
Yeah, I agree. I am suggesting we're unrealizing the director's vision. I completely agree with you. So, yeah.
But you could do that in her running around the house, right? If she goes out and has that, now she can videotape things somehow and email them pretty easily. I guess her mobile, as she calls it, has a camera on it. I have no idea how she's filming these things and uploading it.
No, I think she says at one point she's driving around with her computer. I think it's the laptop, and then when she gets back to the house, she dials up and uploads the videos.
So it does have I guess maybe it has a camera that can record onto the computer, and then she can...
Right.
Sure, whatever. It works, right? and I guess you could do what you're saying, where you could actually show the cult mm-hmm. with her using the computer to
that
record
way,
it.
That way, right. Yeah. At night, she actually found the cult doing cult stuff. Maybe do it that way. Yeah, that might mm-hmm. have worked.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing I'm just realizing, you never see the computers.
No.
And the reason is, I mean, he used a Hi8 camera to film this. So there may not have been any computer. I mean, there probably wasn't any computers
mm-hmm.
anywhere near the actors.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just the camera in their face.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So does it make the list, Tom? Are we putting this on the keep making movie
it's
list?
Such one of these movies, though, right? Right? It's like, it's not a good movie, but it's just one of our movies. It's a KMM straight through and through. So I've decided, like, quality is not the condition by which a movie lands on this list. It is, does it, how close is it to the ideal, to the platonic of ideal of a KMM? So I'm going to say yes. This is very close to the ideal of a keep making movies movie. Maybe not as much as Island, but it's pretty close.
I'd say yes from me too. Not only do I think it, I think we're seeing exactly what the director wanted to do. And I think the director had a cool idea with the webcams, especially back in 2002. I also think with our list, for better or worse, there's nothing else like it like this. So I think it's worth having on the recommend list because it's another take on a micro-budget film.
It's another way of saving money, right? I think that's what's interesting about these movies. What's interesting and what's frustrating about these movies is that what's interesting about them is how people are working with limitations, right? That's really cool. What's frustrating about these movies is everything is realism. no one is gonna go surrealistic or expressionistic, or, you know, we had the movie with the floating level. What was that called again? The Spanish movie?
The Platform.
The Platform, right? That at least was
Coming out later, audience.
That's coming out. Okay. That hasn't come out yet, but it's one of our movies, and it's, that movie at least is allegorical, right? It's not realistic. It's working in an allegory kind of frame. But a lot of these are really interesting in terms of dealing with incredibly low budgets and making that a thing to celebrate. They're frustrating in the sense that everything's realism. Everything is, they're trying to emulate reality in some way, even a reality that's intersecting the supernatural. And so I would say, yes, this is a KMM.
Nice. I want to take a moment to compare it to Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes, which is the other movie on our list that heavily featured webcams.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that one, you do get the perspective of the webcam sometimes, not that often. And that one also didn't make a lot of sense. They were dragging the computers around in strange ways. But that was also 20 years later that they made. Like, that's a much more recent movie. So it kind of makes more sense.
And it's also, that movie is so much more free.
Mm,
like, it's funny. It's, the ending is weird. Mm-hmm. The ending is like, comes out of left field. And it's kind of gawky. It's also the amount of choreography that has to go into making that movie work is impressive. So what you're watching is a very complex dance routine.
Whereas the Collingswood story is almost the opposite of that.
Yeah, there's no...
there's no dancing.
No, there's nothing that had to be thought through.
But it's, again, webcams were super early, so it was kind of cool that they were able to hold our attention for 90 minutes with a very new thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's official. The Collingswood Story has made the list. So please, Michael Costanza, keep making movies. Audience, what's your favorite movie by Michael Costanza? Let us know on social media at Talking Studios.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video. Subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is. And Adapt It, where we explore adaptations in various forms. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Keep Making Movies, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next week when we discuss Infinitum, Subject Unknown, from 2021. Stay tuned for our first impressions of Infinitum. Next week, we'll be discussing Infinitum, Subject Unknown. Tom, how's your watch?
I watch this at work. I'm currently moving, so I don't have
any admit that.
Oh, it was after hours. My job ends in 2 weeks, so it's fine. So I watched it at work, and my first impression with this movie is it's sort of lack. There's not a lot of tension to it. There's not a lot of drive to the movie. And so you find yourself not entirely engaged with the mystery. There is this kind of grand mystery going on that has a sort of standard science fiction mystery where it's more than who done it or where is the MacGuffin, but it is, the world is altered in some fundamentally impossible way. And thanks to the rules of science fiction, it can be explained via things that are kind of pseudo-magical but have a scientific explanation. that's the potential fun of the movie, but the movie's very slack. It doesn't, you don't feel that tension throughout the movie. And so you sort of wander from the movie. Your attention wanders from it because it isn't a very tense film. It doesn't attract the eye. How about you, KJ? How was your first watch?
So the first time I saw this was back in August 22. We are currently recording in 24. And, you know, I picked it for Keep Making Movies, and I think I got it confused with a Black Mirror episode from season 2 of Black Mirror called White Bear,
right.
Where something kind of similar happens. So I was on this rewatch. I was a little confused why that wasn't happening. But no, audience, I enjoyed the movie. I was along for the ride. Like Tom's saying, it's a little slack. It's a little calm. You're kind of just going through what the character's doing. Yeah, enjoy it, audience. Just, you know, go in with an open mind. Don't expect too much and enjoy it. Infinitum, Subject Unknown, is available on Amazon's Prime Video at the time of recording.
Wow, Talking Studios,